The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Testing.
Testies. 1, 2, 3.
Ow!
I don't know shit about fuck.
Thank y'all. Come again.
I like sucking on the power bottom.
Legit fat podcast.
Do you suck dick?
Oh, yeah. Bullshit.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
This is Joe Biden, and you're listening to Legit Fat Podcast. And now your hosts, Jim, Jan, and Bland.
Welcome back to Legit Bat. If this is your first time listening, I'm Joe, Jen's with me, and Ben made it.
Yeah!
First time in a week and a half, maybe? Ben was a little busy last week. He had his kids and spring break and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. But he's back. He's back in a big way, like Midnight Mike would say. We've talked to Mario before. This is our guest is Mario Garza from Symbolic Studies, and we had him on, I want to say, about a year and a half ago. And I don't even recall what our conversation was about. Like I was telling you before the show, I could go back and check. But so we're gonna get into some eclipse stuff because he's got kind of a different take instead of the normal things everybody's been talking about, all the regular shit we talked about, I think, on the last show and probably the show before that. Everybody's been sick of it, I'm sure, by now, and we're all going to die Monday, so who cares? But he's got a different, you know, take on it with his knowledge of symbology. So why don't you just start off with reintroducing yourself to any new listeners out there and what you do over at Symbolic Studies.
Yeah, for sure. So my project, as you said, is called Symbolic Studies. My site is symbolicstudies.com. What I do is, essentially, the project started off as me following each astrological sign during the sign itself and creating content around that, around each sign. At first, I was developing a poster series around each sign. I've been a graphic designer for a long time, so over 20 years now at this point. And then eventually, you know, after doing that for a couple of years, I realized that I really had a lot to share with people. And so I wanted to be, you know, putting out content, videos and whatnot about each sign during the sign. And so I've been doing that for, I think, 4 years now, something along those lines. So I come at things from a symbolic perspective. I would say probably it's been maybe like 15 years or something. I started collecting symbology books and I started getting the lay of the land of which authors were worth reading and things like that. And so I really like to decode the signs, and I like to decode, say, like tarot cards and things like that by really getting into the symbolism of what we're dealing with here. So we're in Aries season, right? So researching the ram, the nature of the ram, right? How the ram appears in different myths, you know, to different cultures. Researching the nature of fire, you know, Mars, war symbolism, things like that. So that's pretty much my bag, is decoding symbolism by the associated symbols that, you know, each sign is associated with, and the various correspondences, you know, that relate to that and everything else. So that's pretty much my thing, but I'm really starting to branch out and get interested in other symbolism outside of astrology, you know, and that's kind of, you know, some of what I want to talk about today. So even astrology, right? It's a solar based system. It's based on the path of the sun, the ecliptic. You know, this is really interesting. One of the things that I'm kind of coming across right now, sort of my main research rabbit hole these days, is really tracking these three great ages, these three great symbolic ages. And so to me, it appears that we live in a very solarized world. The sun kind of reigns. The sun is kind of the king symbol, I think, in today's age. This was preceded by a lunar age, and then that was preceded by, there's different names for the earliest age, but some people refer to it as the primordial tradition, the polar tradition, the northern tradition. And this is a really fascinating sort of rabbit hole to kind of go down, because this is kind of the root and basis for a lot of modern symbology. And so there was a great transition, essentially, from a polar sort of understanding of the world to a solar understanding of the world. And so a lot of deities that were considered primordial or polar later on got switched, I guess, and the symbolism kind of transferred over to being more solar. I would even say like Christ is a good example of this. Christ is kind of known for being like a solar deity, but there's a lot of evidence that suggests that early on he was more so known with being related to this polar primordial tradition, which is really a whole entire, like, I mean, there's multiple shows that can kind of be done on that, but it's a very interesting transference of symbolism that I've noticed. And so that's kind of the thing that I'm tracking right now too, is that, you know, a lot of how people decode, especially like in the conspiratorial sort of world, the truther world, a lot of people don't understand that symbolism shifts and changes and morphs, you know, and it has throughout the ages. So a lot of things that people kind of call out today as being solar actually has earlier roots. And anyway,
yeah,
so
I learned that a long time ago with the, I've mentioned it before, with the Zeitgeist movie. That one really kind of showed how the symbolisms transfer from culture to culture, and they're kind of telling the same story with different language, different, you know, definitions, different everything, but it's the same like root story, kind of like the hero's journey. Yeah. You see that repeated everywhere. So with the, and I guess Christians would probably disagree with this, but that Jesus is kind of a sun god, god of sun, you know, son of God. A lot of Christians will disagree with that and say that is not the case. But I mean, if you're looking at it from a history perspective, it kind of does look like that. But so is most of your stuff astrological, or have you, it sounds like you've kind of delved into the astro-theological area too. I don't know if you're familiar with Micah Dank, but he's written books on that whole thing. And he seems to think everything is astro-theological, like all religions, basically everything points back to the stars, because that's the only thing these primitive people knew was what was up there. And that's what they saw. So they made stories about it. Do you agree with that?
Essentially, I do agree with that. What I'll say, I'll take it one step further and say that right now, most people are concerned with the astrological signs, right? And that plays a big part in a lot of myths. And I definitely don't disagree with that. But one of the things that I've come across, and I've read this in multiple books at this point, and it's something that is a very niche sort of thing to get into, but it's the origin of the astrological signs. It's the origin of what we call, you know, the zodiac.
How they made the pictures out of those four stars, like that kind of thing.
Well, it's interesting. So this polar to solar switch also applies to astrology. And so, as I mentioned, the astrological signs are along the path of the sun, right? This is the ecliptic. And so when you're following the sun, it's going through the 12 houses. It's going across the 12 signs, right? And so what I've learned is that there are several authors and researchers who suggest, and I'm on board with this, and I think that this is accurate, is that what happened is that the original sky clock, so we refer to the zodiac as the sky clock and the wandering stars, right, the planets, but the original sky clock was actually in the northern sky. And so the original sky clock was Ursa Major going around the pole star. And so when we're following the sun, this is clockwise. So even the rotation of clockwise and counterclockwise, going clockwise, that's a solar rotation. When you really get into deep symbolism, that's what you're going to find out. And so even cultures that have circumambulation rituals where they're revolving around a central totem, right? So you think of Mecca, people go to Mecca and they go around the Kaaba cube seven times, right?
Or the Maypole. That's a weird one.
The Maypole, exactly right, 100%. So if you're going around the central totem, which is something that I've also really gotten interested in, is the kind of occult science and the metaphysics of all this stuff. If you're going around that clockwise, that is a solar rotation. If you're going counterclockwise, this is known as a polar rotation. And so the northern sky, you have two constellations. There's three main constellations up there that I concern myself with. Ursa Major, Ursa Minor. This is the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. The Little Dipper's handle, the end of it is the pole star, polar, pole star. And so those constellations go around the North Star, right? Also known as Polaris. They go around in a counterclockwise rotation. And so this was the primitive sky clock. This was the earliest sky clock that man was concerned with. And so what happened was at a certain point, the concern went from a polar northern understanding of things. And as things got solarized, our focus, humanity's focus, shifted to the path of the sun. So there was a time before solar worship, essentially, is what I'm learning. And so this is interesting because another author, his name is John Major Jenkins. He has this book called Galactic Alignment. And he says that the ancient Chinese essentially had a northern zodiac, so around the North Star. And what they saw, he says, around 5,000 years ago, and I'm really hesitant to give out dates because I don't know what year we're in. It like almost, it's just one of those things where you can't really concretely... in my opinion, history's all up for grabs. You know what I mean? And so I mean,
we could be in the year 2811. I don't know. Everything's based off of apparently Jesus and what came before and after Jesus. So
right. Come on, bro. Y2K in 2012.
Hey, the Christians won everything. It's the year of our Lord 2024. They won.
Louis C.K.
Yeah. Right, right. So there's even, you know, cultures around the world have different ideas about what year it is. You ask the Chinese, they have one idea. You ask the Jews, they have another idea. You ask the Muslims, they have another idea, right? But according to John Major Jenkins, around 5,000 years ago, right around, he says, the formation of the I Ching, which is like the Chinese divination system, right? He said that they had an 8-station zodiac, meaning that they had 8 constellations around the pole star that they considered to be their sky clock, right? So it revolves around the pole star, and they were concerning themselves with those 8 constellations. This is interesting because he says that each constellation corresponded with a different trigram in the I Ching system. So if you study the I Ching, there's 64 hexagrams. Those hexagrams are made up of 8 trigrams that are stacked on top of each other. Each trigram is made up of 3 lines, either yin or yang. And he said at some point over the ages, when the world became more solar, when people started concerning themselves with more solar symbolism than anything else, they shifted their sky clock, they shifted their zodiac from the 8 constellations in the north, and they basically transferred those constellations to the ecliptic, the path of the sun, and then they added 4 more constellations, giving them a zodiac. And so there's like 3 or 4 authors, I'm sure there's more, that I've been reading that suggest that astrology, the signs we know, the 12 signs of the zodiac, come from the north. There's a northern correspondence to this. And so, again, there's a whole metaphysical sort of aspect to all of this, and it's probably worth getting into just the whole entire concept or the dynamic that all of the stars in the heavens revolve around one star. They revolve around the pole star, except the wandering stars, right? And so if you take a time-lapse photo and you look at the north, you're going to see a streak of stars around the pole star. And so that star symbolically has been known as the hub of the wheel of heaven, essentially, that the heavens has been compared to a wheel for such a long time, and that the center point in that wheel is the hub of this great sort of cyclical dynamic of what's going on up there. And so the pole star has a relationship with the North Pole, right? And the pole that extends from the North Pole to the pole star, if you want to look into it, this is a rabbit hole that I've been down for years now, but it's the gift that keeps on giving with symbolism. It's referred to as the world axis. And so the world axis is this idea that there is an axis. This would be like symbolically the Z-axis, right?
Is that
up and down.
The axis mundi? Is that what
yes,
they call it?
That's okay. It. Yeah. So the world axis, the axis mundi, this was a ancient concept that has been lost. But the idea is that this symbolic pole is a symbolic bridge between realms, between the above and the below, between heaven and earth, right? And so when you look at a world tree, symbolically, it's the axis moon to your world axis. When you look at or look into the concept of a central polar mountain, same sort of idea. It bridges the gap between heaven and earth. And so the pole star is along that line. And so what we're referring to as well is this concept of a stairway to heaven. There's a lot of groups that have this idea that we go to, you know, some sort of stairway, or there's some sort of gate. There's Jacob's ladder is a very similar sort of metaphor. Pillar symbolism is very much related to all of this, that there is essentially a pathway to the heavens. And a lot of cultures have essentially said that it's at the north, you know, but this is this idea is that there is a center to the universe and there's a center to earth. And this relates to the center of self as well. And so I see this early tradition, the primordial northern polar tradition, as actually being way more related to what's happening within, essentially. So I see solar symbolism as being very externalized, almost like the rays of the sun. Everything is about external validation. You're relying on experts. Everything has to come from without and come towards you. Versus in the polar tradition, there was way more of a focus of kind of what was happening locally, what was happening within, things of that sort. So, like I said, it's a whole entire science. There's many, many aspects to all of this. But I think that astrology does have a northern origin. And this gets into center symbolism. So if you look into the center, everything emanates from the center and returns to the center. So not unlike a Taurus field.
Yeah, and that's not to get into, we steer pretty clear of the flat versus globe debate these days, because it's just such a, it's an exercise in futility, first of all, because it's just, until something happens where we can all see it in front of our face, nobody's going to agree. I'm done arguing with people about it, because I don't really stand on either way. But gun to your head, what do you think about that idea? Or do you think it's more of like a realm toroid type of deal, like the earth is a donut?
I also have a follow-up to that. Is that more referring to hollow earth theory, and what are your thoughts on that?
Does the earth have a butthole?
So in my opinion, this is the amazing thing about the world axis and world axis symbolism, is that regardless of flat versus round versus hollow, the world axis and that northern location is of supreme importance.
And it works on all of them, right?
It works on all of them. And that's why I appreciate the symbolism behind it, is because it doesn't matter what your cosmology is. That world axis, that axis mundi, that pole that connects and is the bridge between realms, is still significant. And so what I like to say, actually, is that we don't live in a solar system. We live in a polar system, because everything revolves around that world axis, essentially. And a lot of ancient peoples had this understanding, essentially, you know. And I'm sorry, Ben, what was your question?
Just about, you said the center of self, and you were talking about the center of the earth. It made me think of hollow earth theory. And is there any kind of thing that you have found with in your research that points to any kind of validity to that theory?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's the thing, is that they're both valid, you know, in their own way. And so,
kind of all agree that the earth is semi-hollow. I mean, look at the cave networks under there. It's not, I wouldn't say hollow like the inside of a basketball or something like that, maybe at the very center, I don't know, but like at least the crust in the upper layer of whatever this is it's kind of like an anthill. There's just shit everywhere into there. It's not just a solid mass,
right? Yeah, exactly. So what I would say to that is that with hollow earth, you know, one of the things that people love to talk about is this portal or gateway or entrance to another realm. Right. People, that's just like part and parcel. It comes with hollow earth material. And so that entrance, people like to say, is largely at the poles, right? At the north or the south pole. Right. And I think that there is something to that, And so that is partly what I'm saying regarding the world axis, is that the world axis, again, is that bridge between realms. And it really is like the foundation for all of our symbolism, believe it or not. So as an example, the number one is just a straight vertical line. You know, the penis, you know, the phallus is very much related to world axis symbolism. When you get into it, you start reading some of these older authors, they attribute everything to the world axis, the lance, the sword, the cross. You know, the cross started off as just a standing stone, a vertical pillar, essentially. And then at some point, the horizontal arm was added. I have a book called The Symbolism of the Cross, and that author says that right at the very beginning of the book, is that what predates the cross is literally just a vertical stone, essentially, which...
That's interesting, too, just to interject real quick. That's interesting with the horizontal addition kind of points to a solar, you know, reaching out to outside the self or outside the center, pointing outside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got it. Exactly. There's a whole science, occult science, metaphysical science, whatever you want to say, about the cross and how it relates to the center as well. Because if you just imagine if you're at the north, that's maybe one thing that I'll say, is that symbolically, a lot of groups believed or knew, depending on how you look at it, that the north was the center of this domain. And so if imagine you are at the center, either you're on the top of the world or you're at the center of the world, you could imagine that four lines emanate from that center. The same way, you know, wherever you're at, there's four cardinal directions that emanate from you, you know. And so the cross has always been related to Lord, King, Emperor symbolism. The fourth card, four, relates to the Emperor card, right? And that's actually, it relates to Aries and Aries season. That's the correspondence. And so I just finished an excellent book. And I know I'm going on a quick tangent here, but...
Oh, no, tangent away. Love it.
All right, let's do it. So this author here, René Guénon, he has been blowing my mind. He is, I would say, honestly, like I said, I've been collecting symbolism books for years. This guy may very well be the greatest symbologist in the modern world, in my opinion. He is kind of, to me, he's the man. You know, he his understanding of all this stuff, his sort of, you know, understanding and awareness of the world axis and how it relates to spirituality and things like that is completely next level. But I finished reading this book. I've gone through a few of his books already, or over the last few months, rather. And it gets into how the Lord, this concept of a Lord or a King, goes back to this world axis, this northern sort of concept, right? And that the king exists at the crossroads of these cardinal directions, essentially. And I've read other works that basically say that a lot of emperors and kings way back when, what they did was they divided their kingdom in four quadrants or four quarters. And that the middle of their kingdom, there would oftentimes be a totem of some kind. Sometimes it would be a stone, a standing stone. Sometimes it would be a family tree. It would be a mound. It could be a temple, things like that. But the old template, a castle, totally. Yeah, the old template tower, the old template was that there was this central totem at the middle of these, of this crossroads, right? Oftentimes there was a north-south road and an east-west road. And they would occupy that space in the middle. And people from around the kingdom would come and congregate at this central location. And this is where rituals were performed. When people say someone is drawn and quartered, this has a reference to the four quarters of that location. Oftentimes, too, there was like a ringland sort of dynamic. Everything, you know, it was like concentric rings, basically. So Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Ringlands, right? The idea that they were mirroring was that essentially what they were kind of, I would say, mimicking is that they were mirroring the north. And so the northern concept, the origins of humanity coming from the north, is something that a lot of different groups have talked about, right? Some people think paradise or Eden existed at the north. There's the idea of four rivers emanating, you know, from Eden. it's exactly like what I'm referring to, the north, south, east, and west sort of directions of that central location. And so they had this central location. If you looked at it from an aerial view, there was this large cross. They occupied the center point. And so they believed that, you know, their word, their law, you know, what they wanted to happen in their kingdom would emanate from that center location, almost like ripples or something like that, right? That from the center location, you would have these this energy, or you would have whatever it is that they were trying to put forth, emanate throughout the kingdom. But they divided the kingdom into these four different sections. And so if you're in the middle of the kingdom, in the middle of that cross, you are essentially what binds and links all of the four quarters together. And that that central location in the middle of the cross was the transcendental point. This would be the Z axis. So you would have the X axis and Y axis, and then you'd have the Z axis that would actually be 3D. This is mirroring the northern concept, the world axis concept. And so this is also mirroring the heavens as well, with the pole star being in the middle and the heavens being divided into quarters. And that's how a lot of astrology is done, basically, right? So we have four main elements. We have 12 signs, you know, so three signs per element, right? And so, you know, there's crosses in the heavens. So there's the fixed cross and mutable cross and things like that. And so the idea has always been, if it's good enough for the heavens, it's good enough for us. So this central totem concept was also how they created their home. And so a lot of older homes were circular in nature, and they had that hearth right in the middle. They had that sacred fire in the middle. I've literally read in certain books that some native groups, they literally consider that central fire to be the North Star, and that the circular hut, right, or the teepee was mirroring the cosmos. And so people had a more circular idea of the cosmos with a dot in the middle. This is the circumpunct. This is the symbol for the sun. I think the symbol for the sun at one point was actually more of a polar northern symbol, actually. And then it got transferred over to being more of a solar symbol. And so what ancient peoples used to do was they had an understanding of the heavens and of the cosmos, and they were trying to mirror that on Earth. And so you could say that the Lord or the King has a northern polar sort of correspondence. And like I said, René Guénon, he really gets into all of this. Like, he completely breaks this all down with older kings and emperors and how they saw the heavens, how they saw the world. And they basically believed that, hey, you know, again, if this is good enough for the gods and good enough for what's happening above us in the stars, then we should probably mirror it down below. You know, you can't pay, you know, more respect than that, essentially.
Does that dude get into the angle of sorrow? So I've heard a lot of that with the 90 degree angles and the way that our houses are built now and most architecture, and it's squares. It's nothing but 90 degree angles everywhere you look. And it's called the angle of sorrow, because it's just kind of like, man, like a prison, you know. And the more, I guess even the old architecture would still have a lot of 90 degree angles. It's kind of hard to not do that. But there was also a lot more, you know, circular or wavy or flowy architecture. Have you got into that at all?
Yeah, a bit for sure. You know, some of the symbolism related to the square, it's always related to foundations, and it's always related to stability and things like that. But it also, kind of the shadow of it is that it's sort of like a container that you can't escape out of. It's like something like a prison. So there's even like a cult symbolism where they utilize a double square. So it's like two squares stacked on top of each other that overlap, almost like a Vesica Pisces, but instead of circles, it's a square. And so if you do that, you're just going to create more 90 degree angles, right? And so I think that's absolutely a thing. You know, even I have a buddy. Have you guys ever talked to Christopher Topher? Christopher Gardner.
No, I don't think so.
Topher Gardner. No. He builds circular homes. He builds dome homes.
Oh,
and
nice.
He is incredible, dude. He knows his shit with all of that stuff. So I've heard him talk at length, you know, about the circular nature of like the dome home and everything else. And he's built them, you know, like in Costa Rica and here in the US and things like that. But he said, like, as an example, that there was a dome home that they had worked on. He had to come back to the U.S. I can't remember the situation, but nobody had been in that home or in that space for a really, really long time. And then he visited it again after however many months or years. And he was expecting things to kind of actually be a little dustier and things like that, you know, because nobody was occupying that space. And he was amazed at how clear it felt, essentially. And it
the when feng you're shui.
Yeah. And the dome itself, it doesn't allow for cobwebs, as an example, the same way, you know, the Angle of Sorrows does. So if you just have a cube home, basically, you know, you're going to collect dust. You're probably going to have cobwebs, things like that. With a dome home, everything, it keeps this sort of like there's a flow to it, essentially. And you're really honoring, honestly, the ancient cosmology that people used to have. And so the dome is the home, you know. Even look at the letter D, the capital letter D. It's just a sideways dome. It's pretty interesting, right? And so that was the old cosmology that, you know, there was a firmament and it was not unlike a dome. And then the bottom portion of it was flat. And so that world axis would be a symbolic vertical line, you know, between the top of the dome and, you know, the bottom portion. So I see that
interesting.
You're
interesting. Yeah. So I'm trying to pull up which does he build stuff that looks like this for the audio listeners? I just Googled dome homes. So,
does not it look anything quite like this extravagant, I would say.
But these are billionaire dome homes.
Some of these are really, really nice. But I mean, honestly, the idea is really essentially the same. And so this also gets into arch symbolism, and this gets into royal arch symbolism, like Freemasonic royal arch masonry. And so the dome really is an amazing shape for a lot of different reasons. I personally, I would love to live in a dome home.
They look cool.
Yeah, yeah, they're really, really cool. And it to me, it's more holistic. And I think that, you know, ancient peoples living in a circular structure, people like to think that they were just simpletons, right? And that there's really nothing to it. But there was a whole entire science to it. The same way living in a, you know, squared rectangular home, there's a science behind that too. But it's not necessarily good. It doesn't allow for flow. You know? It might be.
And now, time for your friendly ad break.
It might be
more complicated, but who's saying that's better? I heard somebody argue that with the architecture from like the so-called Dark Ages, where you have these elaborate cathedrals and all these buildings that you can't, I mean, you see some of the architecture now and you're like, you get paid to do that? I could have probably done that. I heard somebody arguing, they're like, this is way more technical and advanced and, you know, all the circuitry and all the blah, blah, blah that goes into it. I'm like, well, you're assuming that's a good thing. A lot of these old buildings are probably a lot better for you, almost like health, like you said, holistic, like the building itself is actually more healthy for you than going into the World Trade Center. Bad joke, but that was not good for a lot of people's health, and they were square. Well, I'm just saying.
I got a question for you on this then, because, Joe, that same kind of concept, they've talked about the magnetic properties of pyramids. Obviously, pyramids are not domes. What is
not 90 degrees, though, either. Well, I guess the bottom would be.
That's true. They're not 90 degrees, most of them. But that makes me then want to ask you, because pyramids for a long time have been associated with astronomy, whether it be all three in Giza and the shafts pointing to different stars and this, that, and the other. Do you feel like that was later on? That was already after kind of the degradation of the holistic part of it? Or what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, as far as the timeline of things, I can't really say. But what I will say, though, is that the pyramid is related to, you know, my research of what I'm getting into with this polar tradition, basically. Because really, at the end of the day, you know what a pyramid is. And I don't hear this mentioned too often. Maybe it's obvious to you guys, but it's a mountain. And so the pyramid is essentially a mountain. And so when you get into mountain symbolism, you learn that a lot of cultures around the world had their sacred mountain. It was their holy mountain. And so it's no different than any other world axis symbol. It bridges the gap between heaven and earth. And so when you walk up a mountain, you know, you're getting closer to God symbolically, right? You're getting closer to the heavens, right? And then once you get to the top of the mountain, you now have a new perspective that's 3D, or excuse me, 360 degrees all around you, right? And so it gives you this new vantage point. And so the mountain has long been associated also with like transformation and things like that. And so
wasn't there actually a mountain of transfiguration in the Bible? Like literally?
Right. Yeah. And so a lot of groups. I mean, yeah, basically, I would say. I don't know if it was literally called that, but most cultures have like it's either.
That might be a translation error.
Probably, or just my stupid brain, but sorry.
I know that Mount Sinai was obviously a big story with transformation with Moses post.
Exactly.
Oh, no, maybe I was thinking of the transfiguration of Christ was on a mountain or something. I don't know. Something like that.
Well, yeah, gotcha. Because they go to the Mount of Golgotha when that happens. So I understand 100% what you're saying with that, because it would almost make me think then that your dome possibly a pyramid in one of your cultures.
You also have the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, right? You know, which is where you have the Dome of the Rock.
And so, we all know they're worshiping the right God, so we can rely on that.
yeah, exactly. So just briefly, I want to mention that there is this idea that there is a central mountain, a central tree, a world tree, something along these lines, a stairway to heaven sort of idea, and that humanity comes from the north, returns to the north. And this is really fascinating because there's a lot of people right now, actually, Christians, who are starting to integrate northern symbolism into sort of their framework of things. So if people want to look into that, you can look into millennial kingdom sort of information. And so people think that they're like some Christians are actually trying to go to the North Pole. You don't need to do that, in my opinion. But a lot of Christians now, online at least, have this sort of northern polar kind of idea that they're bringing into the fold for them. So that kind of blew my mind because I pay attention to all this stuff. But
that's fair, because even like we had, who was it? I don't remember. I think it was David Weiss when we got the apps and stuff for the flat earth talk that we had when we had him on.
Yeah, that was him. Yeah.
What blew our minds was how he tied it into biblical Christianity. Joe and I were raised in that. That was never anything that we had heard. And it was right. The first time that I saw somebody who was a flat earther be like, oh, no, the reason why they don't want you to know this is because that's God's, you know, that's God's canvas. And they want to suppress the word of God, which is no offense to him when he lost me, because I'm like, well, then that goes back to the blind faith thing. And I can't do that either. But I've seen a lot more with that, whether it be online or in the discussions that we've had, that a lot of things that were considered either pagan or taboo have now been really bred in with a lot of kind of offshoot Christian sects.
Now, and I love what you said real quick about going to the North Pole physically. That was actually going to be where I was going to segue into, is if the Axis Mundi is a metaphysical thing, or if there's some literality to it, like if you were to actually go there, do you see Santa Claus or do you see a fucking ladder? And now we're going to go see Jesus.
And I want to ask about the South at some point in this conversation, please. But go ahead.
The Earth's
carry
butthole.
On.
That always comes up. Yeah, exactly. And it's totally relevant and valid to talk about for sure. Right. So just real quick, what I was going to say is that every pilgrimage location symbolically is mirroring the origin of humanity. And so whether you're going to the Kaaba cube, whether you're going to Jerusalem or somewhere else, there's usually that sacred totem. The Kaaba cube is basically emblematic of the central mountain, basically. You know, some people refer to it as the lodestone as well, Rupus Negra. And so there's this idea that there's this magnetic stone at the north, this black stone, black rock. And so the Kaaba cube is kind of that same sort of interface. And the circumambulation usually comes along with that sacred sort of location. idea. And so every pilgrim, when they're going to their holy land, when they're going to the Holy of Holies, their sacred land, symbolically, they are interfacing with this original northern concept. René Guénon refers to these as secondary locations. There's a principal location that would be at the north, and there's secondary locations. So they're just paying homage to the original location. So the fact that some people want to go there now as a kind of a spiritual kind of quest makes so much sense, because that's really what all pilgrims do anyway. You know, they're symbolically going to the Holy Land. And if this is a hollow earth sort of thing, there is a hole at the north. And when there's a pole, you will find a hole. I used to say this all the time, but poles and holes, symbolically, giggity. Poles and holes really explain a lot symbolically, you know, and you'll start noticing it all over the place, right?
I think you actually mentioned that on the first time we talked. That sounds familiar now. Poles and holes.
Poles and holes, man. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Boner.
It reminds me a lot of the Bach saga symbology too.
Yes.
Yep.
Exactly right.
They started in the north and their language rippled. Like it's a lot of what you're talking about. I haven't researched it in depth or anything, but we've listened to a lot of people talk about it.
I don't want to derail you, but just as an aside, a thought I had about compasses with when you're talking about the black rock or whatever at the north. I'm sure there's a scientific explanation, but like if the earth is a rotating sphere and what causes gravity is, you know, blah, blah, blah. Why do compasses point towards the north and not the south?
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, it's a great question for sure. And there like is a magnetic property at the north. That's why we have the aurora borealis. And so my understanding is that the aurora borealis phenomenon at the north literally has to do with the magnetosphere around Earth, whatever shape you want to view that as. But there is a magnetic field around Earth. And if you look into normie science, they acknowledge the magnetosphere. Right. So, and it looks like a torus field, you know. So, if you're going by the ball Earth model, it's literally like a torus field around Earth, which means that there is an opening at the top, just like a torus field. And so, that opening at the top, symbolically, the Egyptians referred to as the cusp of an opening, and that it was the cusp of the horn of a bull. There's actually a lot of surprising cow and bull symbolism related to the northern sky as well. Ursa Major, there's so many correspondences for Ursa Major, but it used to be referred to as the thigh of the bull or the thigh of Set. And so their idea was that our souls ascend to the north and go out that opening. We have the aurora borealis because the magnetics up at the north are different, and it's because of there's an opening essentially with our magnetic field. So you know, so there's something to be said about all of that for sure. But you were asking about the South, you know, that's one of the kind of trickiest things that I personally, to be honest with you, I don't want to be someone that is, you know, so stuck in my lane here with all this stuff that I can't be open to other information. I have a friend in Australia, and he is one of the guys I can actually talk to about all this stuff, because he's kind of on the same trajectory with all of it. And he attributes a lot of everything to northern polar symbolism as well. And so there's a handful of people out there where like this is sort of their bag, and this is kind of like the thing. And over the last couple of years, I've seen more and more people kind of get into this and all of that. And as I've been putting out content around it, people from all over the place have given me like amazing feedback and, you know, given me tips on what to read and what to look into and everything else. But I've asked him too. I'm like, so what's the deal with the South then? You know, like we can't just talk about the North without acknowledging the South. So it depends on how you look at everything, you know. So if you're more of a flat earther person, a geocentric type person, it depends. You know, personally, what I think, honestly, is that we live in a field. And so I think we live within a large torus field, and the plane of inertia is the middle part of the torus field. So there is space in the middle of the torus field, and the middle of the torus field is this sacred center that I'm referring to. And it's the opening that I'm also referring to. And so
it's balance between the two polarities.
Exactly.
It's
right.
Where everything can exist because it's in the balance.
Right. Polarities. Right. So there's some people who say, you know, the further south you go, you know, that there may be a point in which we simply do not have the correct frequency to go to, you know, these outer sort of ring lands. You know, that's another thing I'm open to. If I'll just be honest with my cosmology of how I see it. We live in Middle Earth. So there's more land in the interior and there's more land in the exterior. But we're somewhere in the middle, basically. You know, what people have said is that as you get closer towards the center, it's more like Eden. It's more like a paradise. And as you go further out, it's actually kind of more Saturnian. It's heavier. It's more dense. It's even more ancient, people have said. So I think we live kind of like almost like what I was talking about with the emperors and kings. I think we kind of live in a ringland system, essentially. And we're somewhere in the middle.
Are you familiar with Nos Confunden? He's a dude on Instagram, and he's done, I think, YouTube stuff or whatever. But he makes these maps, and they're not based on anything, as far as I know. It's just an interesting thought experiment to look at them. And he's basically the same kind of idea where it's concentric circles, like ripples. Mm-hmm. And those are different, for lack of a better word, dimensions. And I don't know if you can go through the barrier to get to those, at least with your physical body, but he does these different like thought experiments where there's like ripples of all these different, and I mean it is kind of based on flat earth model, but you get the idea. And it still, it could be many torus fields all piled on top of each other. There's multiverse right there too. I mean, there's so many different ways to think about it, and it's, to see it on a picture is really, it kind of helps your dumb, you know, simian brain to kind of think about it differently.
Right, right. Yeah, that's how I see it. I see it as a nested toroidal system. So if you imagine nested toroids, they all have the same center. And so this would be the world axis, you know, or the cosmic axis, right? That kind of bridges the gap between everything. So that's how I perceive it. Even when I see the circle dot, the circle with the dot right there in the middle, I'm almost of the opinion that that's the most accurate map we can kind of go by.
That's a Freemasonic symbol too. The circle within the dot. I mean, that's all over the place.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. It's called the Godhead, you know, a bunch of other things, but I'm personally kind of where you guys are at. It's like, I just know it's not what we've been taught, essentially, you know?
Right.
And so I can't
and it
really.
It seems like it's something that they came up with, as a way to explain what's going on. Because they're like, most people cannot even wrap their fucking heads around what it actually is. So I go back and forth between, oh, it's an intentional deception for whatever reason. I still haven't figured that one out.
I don't know. I feel like they're overcomplicating it. Because there's so much science behind our spinning ball and the universe. There's so much. But if it's so simple as, there's heaven, it's right there. This is how everything works.
That's kind of what I was going for with the architecture too, is they're like, look, this is so much more complex. And it's like, is that better though? Wouldn't it be better just to have a dome house? Like what?
Well, the other thing
depends
is too,
on what
is that
they want for us.
I think that you're right on there with it being intentional, because again, they didn't even start teaching heliocentric. Thank you. This didn't start teaching that until the late 1800s. But according to them, the reason why they figured, part of why they figured that out, was because of Columbus thinking he was going to India and then landing on American shores 400 years earlier. So it's like the whole teaching globe is like 130 years old versus the rest of time of teaching flat Earth. Now, obviously, as things pick up and you start to learn, yeah, you got to change the fucking material. But I'm right there with you on thinking that it's a ploy. There's a reason why it's being taught what it is. And I'm always going back and forth in that, for the very reason that you had that guy comment on our page about the sniper bullet and the
Coriolis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, he basically said like, no, this is something that they teach. I've been a part of this. There's a reason why, because if the Earth is spinning the way that they're saying a globe does, that lines up perfectly with shots having to take that into the calculation. So I get the arguments on both sides, and I come right back to what you just said. It's just not what we're told, and I don't know what the fuck that is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, to me, the main debate is spin. What's spinning? Are the heavens spinning or is Earth spinning? You know, and that's kind of been the flip, basically, is that they've convinced us now that the Earth is spinning. So if the Earth is spinning, then there's all of this stuff, all of this math, all this science that kind of has to create this spin so that it makes sense on paper.
66,000 you know? Miles an hour. Don't forget that.
yeah, exactly right. 100%. So I think in large part, it's very simple. It has to do with spin. I'll give this quick story. I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but it absolutely blew my mind. When flat Earth stuff started coming out of the woodwork, I read Eric Dubé's first book, a PDF, in 2014. He had just come out with this PDF, 200 Proofs of a Flat Earth. And I was reading his blog before he even mentioned flat Earth at all. And when he came out with this book, I was like, what? I'm like, this is nuts, you know, but I paid for it. I downloaded it and I read it on the way to India of all places. And it was interesting to be in a plane and reading that book and being next to the window and just having this sort of this new sort of way of looking at things. I'm like, damn, man, it does look pretty flat out there. And it kind of looks almost like, I almost felt like I was in a big like terrarium or aquarium or something like that. And we landed and we got to Mumbai. And Indian people are very interested in Westerners and just kind of like, they'll literally ask you like, how much money do you make a year and stuff like that.
But Chinese they want to get to know you. Too. You're a novelty over there. Yeah, kind of cool. Exactly.
Yeah. It was interesting for sure. And so this younger guy, within the first like day or two we were there, he approached me and my friend and he just started asking us all these questions. Eventually we started chatting and we decided to go get tea with him. And we start talking about spirituality. And I just asked him if he has a guru. And he said, yes. And the first thing out of his mouth was, yeah, my guru also teaches the geocentric flat earth model. He says Westerners have no idea that this is actually the truth.
And this is right after you read that on the way there?
Yeah. And without me prompting anything. Wow. And I was like, bro, I'm like, you're blowing my mind right now because I'm reading about this. He says, oh, yeah. He's like, there's people all over the world that know that this is the case, but a lot of people in the West have no clue. And I'm like, well, there's people who are starting to talk about it in a big way. I
and
have a buddy
ostracized and made fun of. And that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Totally. I have a buddy who I just helped film a little documentary series with, and he hired me to do it. And so he's kind of like a client friend, but he's been a flat earther since the 90s. And so he has old books and he has like old maps and he knew the lay of the land back then in the 90s. And he's an Orthodox Christian, like he's a Russian Orthodox Christian. And so he talks about all of that stuff. And he knows the whole history of when the church switched to heliocentrism and all sorts of business, you know. And so he has a lot of interesting details.
If I'm not incorrect, was that a Zionist pope that introduced that? Or no, that was the Big Bang. That was a pope that introduced that idea too, which is really strange. Not a scientist. Yeah.
Yeah. That would not surprise me at all. So the way I see it is that heliocentrism, obviously, it's all about the sun. It's all about solar worship. And so when we're talking about this polar northern tradition, it was more of an earth-based sort of understanding. And so one quick thing that could help people understand these traditions, if you look in the tarot, the major arcana is the main part of the tarot that people talk about. It has the death card and tower card and stuff like that.
They're the
right?
Trump cards. They're the biggest.
Yeah. And so there's three cards in a row that I'm like fixated on right now. And I have been for like a year or two. It's the star card, the moon card, and the sun card. The star card has a woman at night. She's taking or she's preparing a ritual bath. The moon card has two towers, a moon in the background, usually dogs or wolves howling at the moon. And then the sun card has a young child on it. It's either two young children in front of a brick wall or it's a young child on a horse. These three cards are talking about the three symbolic ages that I've been referring to. The sun card is the most recent age, so that's why you have a little boy on it, because it's the youngest. And then previous to that, it was the moon, so it was the lunar tradition. Previous to that, it was the polar tradition, because the star in the star card is the pole star. That's something you're not going to really hear that often. It usually has one main central star, and there are seven stars around it. This is the pole star in Ursa Major. And it was more of a feminine age as well. So what came with heliocentrism, what came with solar worship, and I hate to say it, but it really has to do with the patriarchy. And
I was
going to
say the patriarchy. Yang
which
energy.
Is hilarious. Yes, Yang energy all the way. Exactly. And so so I think that's very interesting. And even in Freemasonic tracing boards, you will see three pillars. You will see one pillar that's lunar, another pillar that's solar, and then there's a central pillar. What's that central pillar about? It's a reference to the polar age. It's a reference to what predates solar and lunar. And so oftentimes that'll be what has the eye of providence on it as well. And so this early age is a key to unlocking so much symbolism that it's kind of like the gift that keeps on giving, in my opinion. And so those three cards correspond with the three pillars in Freemasonry: lunar, solar, and then there's the polar or stellar age. That's another way of referring to it. Because once again, the star card, the pole star, the stellar age, all of the stars revolving around one central star, the North Star.
So when you've been looking at those, I was going to ask this earlier, but with the three kind of cycles you see, is this a repeating cycle or is it something you've just seen in known history, or do you think it comes back around again?
That's a great question. I've been thinking about that, actually. I'm not sure, to give you a quick answer. I don't really know. It makes a lot of...
I love that answer. You know how many people don't want to give that answer? I love it when people are like,
people,
I don't fucking know.
The people in the beginning, you know, whatever... In the beginning, I don't even know what you're calling it, the cycles. So the people in the polar cycle didn't know what was going to come next either. You know, I bet they weren't thinking of the polar...
Or
the
maybe
solar.
They had a Mario Garza and they were like... Wait a minute, I'm seeing a pattern here.
Right. Yeah. I don't really know, but honestly, man, I have to tell you, this, it's more than just a kind of physical understanding of you know, my experience here, of what I'm seeing, you know. It really comes with a spiritual framework. It comes with a metaphysical science that makes way more sense. How many times have people said that, you know, you want to look within, you want to find the still point within, you want to get centered, you want to get grounded. These are polar concepts. When you really understand the symbolism behind all this stuff, these are polar ideas. You know, even the rotation of what I was referring to earlier, the clockwise rotation, the science behind that is the solar clockwise rotation is expansive. The sun is more so expansive and it's more projective, just like the rays of the sun. The counterclockwise polar rotation is actually, it goes within. It's more restrictive. It actually goes towards the center. And so, you know, to me, finding your center, know thyself and you'll know the universe, that's the key here. And that's the science behind all of this. That's why, you know, a lot of traditions, especially in the East, talk about this. Even you just look at the wheel, you know, the cycles of life, kind of like karmic cycles and everything else. What I'm reading right now is that where you want to be is you want to be the center point within the wheel. If you're on the exterior of the wheel, you are going through the hamster wheel. You're kind of just going through the cycles. How do you break out of the cycle? You want to be the immovable mover is sometimes what it's referred to.
Literally centered.
Literally centered. Exactly. You want to be at that still point in the middle, just like the pole star.
That just made me think of another thing too, with the sun worship being a pagan thing. What is Lucifer, the light bringer, and how do you worship the sun? You got to look outward, not inward, as you know, as opposed to the polar idea where you're looking inward. Sun has nothing to do with it if you're looking inward. So if you're just following the sun around, blah blah blah, that's sounds Luciferian to me. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, just my personal experience and how I'm starting to kind of break all this down is it's pretty clear that what was referred to as the center in the primordial northern polar age has to do with this world axis business, right? So whether you're talking about the North Pole, the North Star, etc. So that means that the center point of the world axis, night after night, you can go and look at the pole star, and it's the same location that it's always been and it will ever be in your entire life, right? There's a whole debate too whether or not the precession of the equinoxes creates a pole star shift and that we have different pole stars. I'm starting to be of the opinion that actually that's not accurate, and that's
is there
probably
evidence for that? That's all exactly. I gotta ask,
right? Yeah, and then we only live one lifetime.
I wouldn't say my biggest hang up, but the one of the biggest things where I'm like, I've said it over and over again, that we're moving in 100 different directions at once, spiraling through the galaxy. Somehow that shit looks exactly the same night after night. And the science answer is, it's really far away. Like, bro, you would not even understand how far away this is. That's why it looks the same.
But science never tells us to look within either. That's like the it's the polar opposite. And it doesn't have to be
polar opposite.
It doesn't have to be bad either. I'm not saying science is bad, but it's a distraction. It's almost like a game. Like,
it's busy
they're
work.
Not telling us to look within. They're telling us to look everywhere else. But then there's this polar cycle that teaches us, hey, all you have to do is look from within and all of the answers are right there and you've got it. But there's so much going on and we're not told how to do that, or definitely not taught how to do that. I'm not saying I've got it nailed down, and I'm sure a lot of people don't, but our world isn't built that way. I just don't think it's all the people who are think our Earth is a globe. I don't think they're necessarily wrong or bad for teaching us that in schools. It's more of a it's like an obstacle for us to get past that and say, like, okay, well, actually, this doesn't matter. And maybe it's something else. Just look deeper.
No, science Beautiful. And math and stuff is great. And they make, I was going to say, they make the world go around. But but it's no, it's like, it reminds me of just ADHD busy work. Like the Always Sunny in Philadelphia famous meme of Charlie with all the connected threads and stuff. It's just like, and that's actually the conspiracy theorist meme. But that's what science reminds me of. It's like, oh, X plus Y plus times this variable, and therefore gravity. Like, that didn't prove anything. You wrote a bunch of numbers and letters on a piece of paper and said, boom, I proved gravity.
Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. So that star is there night after night, same location. I know exactly where it's at. Even if it's cloudy outside, which it's always cloudy over here because I live in the Pacific Northwest, I know where the pole star is, right? And so to me, it's really interesting to consider that this star is in the same location. You can't say that about any other star. There's no other star that does the same thing. There's no star in the south that does the same thing. The sun, so just imagine going outside looking at the pole star. Now imagine paying attention to the sun, right? You know, you have to have your head on a swivel. It rises in the east, sets in the west. So I'm looking around. It goes up and then it comes back down. Then it goes underneath the earth. You know, there's all these myths about it going to the underworld and you know, it kind of having a battle with the moon and things like that. But your head has to be on a swivel. So you have to be constantly looking at the sun. And so what René Guénon says essentially is that, and we have some differences. You know, he was born in the late 1800s, died in the 50s. We have differences, but his symbolic awareness is really, truly next level. But what he says is that the last golden age and what we're living through now, the dark ages, he says the difference between the golden age and the current dark age, he's completely against modernity as well. He thinks modern man is fucked up. He thinks our culture is fucked up. He thinks that there's a lot of problems about how people viewed everything, essentially. And he saw how far man has fallen, essentially. I can't necessarily disagree with him with that. I do like the optimistic approach of being like, this is a challenge, or this is the lesson, or that there's things to overcome, and, you know, whatever. I'm totally on board with all of that. You know, that's how I live my life. But I can also criticize the modern world and see that we have lost our way. What René Guénon says essentially is that it's the center that is missing. That is the key difference between the golden ages and the current dark age, is the center is nowhere to be found. And when he said that, when I read that, I'm like, holy cow, dude, you're totally right. That's the difference between this polar primordial age and the current solar age, is the center has shifted. The center has shifted from the world axis and the pole star to now the sun, which constantly just goes around and around and around. So now we're taught that we live literally in a solar system where the sun is in the middle of this whole entire thing, right? And so to me, that just makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and it I mean, like, metaphorically, it makes a lot of sense too, because when you're saying you lost your center or nobody's centered, and if they're outward projecting like that, like you said, with from our vantage point, the sun is just doing all kinds of crazy shit. It's chaotic. We're focusing on this chaotic.
It's chaotic
thing
from
that's
our
going
perspective.
Out. Meanwhile, you look to the North Star at night. That motherfucker's still sitting there, just
constant.
Going, "Come back to me. We can be, you know." We can be centered together. We can just come back here and be centered. Don't worry about what that motherfucker's doing. I know it gives you life on your little ball or your whatever, but it's you're focusing on the chaoticism, if that's a word. And
can be.
I don't think anybody would disagree in 2024 that everybody has lost their fucking center.
Exactly.
Everybody's gone mad, including us. Everybody has.
Well, everything's focused on outside, like I was saying earlier, that we all have our phones. We're all super hyper-focused on that. Or the TV, anything else. No one's really...
Yeah, and your phone's chaotic as fuck.
Yep, it is.
You'd think that would be centering because it's, you know, right here. But no, it's more chaotic than anything.
No, but even TikTok is super popular. Don't get me wrong. I've definitely checked out TikTok. But reels are so important to people. But they're like 10 seconds long. It's 10 seconds of something random. And then it's on to something else. And you can just swipe up and see the next random thing that has nothing to do with anything else.
I was talking about with ADHD. It's just, bah, on to the next
thing. It's encouraging ADHD, yeah.
Yeah, no, you totally got it. I mean... If we live in the golden age, it's the golden age of distraction, really. The golden age of distraction and avoidance. And so just
it's
anything
the golden
to fill
age for somebody,
void.
But not normal humans, I don't think.
Yeah, people even brag about, we see the memes all the time of, someone knocked on my door today and I just hid and waited until they went away. And don't get me wrong again, I've definitely been that person. But why are we so opposed to talking to other humans? Why do we want to stay inside? But see, that attitude, not with that attitude.
Like, I know, but...
you have to change that.
Okay, I would say most of them suck, according to the media. Most people I meet in real life, not so bad.
If you're centered, though, you can talk to anybody. If you're centered and grounded, what anyone says to you wouldn't bother you, because you already know who you are. So you wouldn't be derailed by that. It wouldn't rattle you.
I don't think it's bothering. Like, it doesn't bother me. I just don't really like a whole lot of people, either.
That's fine.
And... that could be a personal issue. I don't know. I just don't really like a whole lot of people. But before we get out of here, dude, I want to get your take on the eclipse since we teased that at the beginning.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And not the CERN or the rockets or it's making an Aleph or whatever Hebrew letter over the United States and Jesus is going to come back.
Every conspiracy is related to this eclipse.
And there's going to be volcanoes and like God's going to piss on us or whatever. Whatever. We'll find out Monday. Stay tuned. I just want to hear your symbolic approach on that and what you think about this particular eclipse.
Right. Yeah, definitely. You know, I'll say that where I'm at these days, kind of like with the pole star centered business or whatever, I'm personally more interested in information that's going to, say, stand the test of time. You know, I don't know if I'm being arrogant with that, but I'm looking more towards timeless classic information that gets me going and gets me off way more than following the latest anything, really. And so I was in that rabbit hole for years and years and years. And one of the things that really started to bother me greatly was everyone's fear mongering about everything that happens now. Whether it's some celebrity that does this or some music video that does that or some politician says this and that, whatever.
And it's on both sides. It's not just the media. It's the, which I meant to say earlier, I despise this term, but the truther community. Truthers. I don't like that term. I would never call myself that. That's assuming that I'm saying truth and I'm not. But it's on both sides. It's mainstream and alternative now. Everything fear mongers.
Exactly. And also, too, what I've come to appreciate as well is, they're with the grounded centered business with the polar understanding or the polar wisdom. That's what some people have referred to it as, which I think is absolutely a thing, you know, obviously. You're more in the present moment. You're not always looking ahead, which creates anxiety. You know, one of the greatest quotes I ever read was, if you're constantly looking into the future, you're going to be prone to anxiety. If you're constantly looking into the past, you're going to be prone to depression. If you're in the present moment, though, you're going to be prone to peace. And there's so much power with that. And I see it all over the place with people who are anxious and wound up because they're always projecting ahead. The sun projects, right? You're always looking to the next thing. You're never in the current moment. And so with this eclipse. I'm not surprised, though, that people are fear-mongering and coming up with all these different conspiracy theories about it. Because really what we're dealing with, you know, most of the truth community is conspiratainment, essentially, you know. And this does fit in line, though, very interestingly, with a lot of different opinions about what eclipses are all about. Because if you think about it, if we live in a solarized world, and this is subliminal, you know, this isn't, people don't overtly talk about this. I mean, they do. They don't overtly consider the sun. They just wake up, do their thing, whatever. But the sun is being eclipsed. So this means that the yin is eclipsing the yang. That, of course, is a very disturbing thing for a lot of people if you live in a heliocentric solar-based system. Because what they're saying is that the center is being hidden. And I really think that there's something to be said about the feminine always being kind of like the hidden hand in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of people like to say, or it you know, has been said that it's a man's world. The way I look at it is, it is a man's world.
Behind every great man is a great woman.
Boom.
Sounds like an eclipse, right?
Yes. So if
we
look at
the
man's
world. That's her just reminding him. She's like, not today, bitch.
Yes, right. Exactly. If we live in a man's world, I like to say that we live in a feminine universe. You know, I came from mother. I came from a womb, as did everybody here. I think that childbirth is even symbolically, I think that there's a metaphor for the birth of the cosmos, meaning that man came from woman, which is why in Christianity it's inverted, right? So I think it's interesting that a lot of different groups had this idea that eclipses were bad and that it was like this chaotic nature, kind of symbolically eating or overtaking, you know, obscuring the masculine sort of presence, the light, basically. But I wonder, though, because I've been looking in my symbolism books and there's all these examples of people fearing the eclipse, staying inside, considering it a bad omen and all these other types of things. But it makes me wonder if this is more of a solarized sort of perspective, that these people, even though they're ancient, you know, according to like how long we live, you know, that they're ancient peoples based on, you know, when we're living right now and how long we live for. But I wonder if in the primordial age, I wonder if in the polar northern age, if eclipses weren't bad omens, you know, that actually they maybe had more of a reverence for this sort of thing. So it seems like they're either highly undesirable or that there is even, you know, some cultures did favor them to a certain degree. But more than anything, I'm just not into, you know, a lot of people projecting what's going to happen with this, because so many times people in the conspiracy world will say this event's going to do this and that event's going to do that. And then the date comes and goes and nothing happens. But nobody reviews their predictions and nobody goes back and says, hey, you know what? I kind of messed up on that one. I wasn't really right. But it gets clicks and it gets views. So that's just sort of the world we live in.
There's so many more people who are doing that now, which is shocking, because back in the day, there'd be a couple and we would just rip on them and make fun of them. Like that one guy on YouTube who said the end of the world was coming on this day. Now there's like 100,000 people who are making claims that aren't going to come true at all.
And anybody with a phone now can make predictions and put shit on YouTube. So it's just like parsing through all of that is madness.
Well, there's no accountability anymore, because they don't, no one cares. They're just going to scroll past it, or they won't get likes. That's it. Okay. That's not so bad. You're not going to be shamed forever, because everyone else said it too. There's too many people saying this bullshit information.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I like your outlook on it, talking about looking at older knowledge and older, like, repeatable cycle patterns and all that stuff. That's kind of where I'm at, where I like to think of it as zooming out. So instead of being focused on this one little gear that spins and makes this other gear spin, you zoom out and notice that it's just a pocket watch, and you can see all the gears moving together and they all move. And then it repeats the same thing over and over again. So if you can zoom out and just look at the history like that, it makes it a little bit easier to understand, I guess. Not that you can predict what's going to happen or that you're omniscient or know what's going on, but it kind of gives you, you know, that center, that peace where you're like, I can just watch the cogs spin. I don't have to be a part of it. I can just watch them do their thing. Now it's 6 o'clock. Okay.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There's a whole thing with being the mover of the wheel, being that center point that allows things to kind of move all around you, but you're just kind of observing from this, you know, other vantage point. You're not necessarily in the mix with other people getting up in arms about this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah. And to a large degree, everybody is the center of their own world. And
absolutely,
you're kind of watching the world spin around you like a big fucking clock. So stop absolutely getting involved with all the stupid shit. Do you think Biden's going to win? Oh, sorry. Don't care. No. Don't give a shit.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on. Ben, how was your poop? Was it a good poop?
Oh, good. I'm glad that's on there. It was good. Yep. Pretty solid. Quick, nice and easy.
You at best unfuck yourself.
Well, I'm glad to have it.
That's good.
And to be fair, my shit is literally out there. I had to stop in the middle of a show one time to go take a dump. So it's not a big deal.
This was such a good show. How are you devolving it into poop?
I can edit it out.
Okay.
Well, dude, thank you so much. We will have you on again sooner rather than later because I forgot how amazing these talks can be because you know your shit and you know what you're talking about way more than we do. Is there any other plugs you want to get out there before we get out of here?
You know what? Yeah, just let people know, I suppose, that I do tarot readings. So if people are interested in doing readings or if they're interested in a reading, rather, I can definitely provide that service. And I got a few other things available on my site. So once again, symbolicstudies.com. You can find me on YouTube and Twitter and, you know, Instagram, all that kind of stuff.
Nice. Awesome. How do you do the tarot readings? Is it like a Zoom call?
Yeah. So it's a video chat. And I really get into the symbolism, you know, which makes sense for me. So if people like my information, if they like my style of videos, I really use every reading as like an opportunity to teach about the cards. Because my personal philosophy with everything is like, you should teach people how to do stuff themselves, right? I don't want to be the expert that someone has to rely upon for, you know, these types of things. I think you're much better off gaining the skills yourself. I don't blame people for not wanting to get into it and not really having the time to dive in. So of course I'm happy to do a reading for you. But, you know, me and my fiance, she's a content creator too. Our whole thing is that like, we want to teach you how to do this stuff yourself, you know, how to become independent, sovereign, you know, self-reliant, all that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Awesome. And
since you're a graphic designer, you should probably design your own tarot cards. That might be a fun thing for you to do. Have you thought about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it'll be in the works. So I haven't started anything quite like that, but for sure, I think at some point that'll happen.
Well, let me know when you make them, and I'll order some, because I haven't had a tarot deck in years, so I would love to have a custom Mario tarot deck. That'd be awesome.
Nice, dude. Right on. Very cool.
Well, we'll add all of your links and whatnot into the show notes. Thanks, everybody, for listening and watching, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Legit Bad. Please address all content grievances to gofuckyourself@yourmom.com. See you next week.